Hello, this is Dr. Leo Stauder with Anatomy on the Beach, and today we're going to be talking about the autonomic nervous system. Really, when we look at the autonomic nervous system, we're talking about it being an active or an automatic nervous system. And let's just go a little bit further here from the water's edge, so we get a little bit less of our seagulls in the background there. We're going to look at it as an autonomic or automatic nervous system. And when we speak of autonomic or automatic, what we mean is that it's going to be operating without conscious control. Unlike the system that we've been talking about all the way through so far, and that's the somatic nervous system. The somatic nervous system, soma, as you remember, means body. So it's really going to be the body system. So when we look at the somatic nervous system, we see that we're going to be having nerves that are going to be moving the body, and that's going to be different from the autonomic nervous system, because the somatic nervous system is going to be the active or under our conscious control nervous system. So when we say move your hands or move your feet, you know, we're going to be doing this with the S and NS, or the somatic nervous system. Whereas if you think about your intestines, and you think about your heart beating, you think about you breathing, all these things are done without your conscious control, generally speaking, then we're going to be looking at the autonomic nervous system. You don't really need to think about when to breathe. You'll breathe automatically. Although you can, you know, modify your breathing with increase or decrease of your respiration, you know, from your consciousness. But when you decide not to be conscious about it, because you're using your somatic nervous system, you're using your somatic muscles to pull and to push, and you're doing this forcefully, consciously, but you're not doing it consciously when you're not thinking about it. When you're asleep, you're still breathing, and that's because the autonomic nervous system is really the system that's going to be for respiration. The same with digestion. I mean, you can't make your kidneys work, and you can't make your liver work, and you can't make your digestion work. And the same with elimination. You know, like I said, with the kidneys, or with your bladder, or whatever else, you know, they're going to be working. And you can override them with your somatic nervous system, as we saw, or as we will see, coming up in Anatomy 2, we'll see that we can override these automatic things, such as, you know, having to urinate. I mean, you have to urinate, but you don't do it right away. You can wait maybe 10 minutes or 20 minutes or whatever, because your somatic nervous system, which is under your conscious control, can modify your autonomic nervous system. But that only goes so far. As you know, you still have to go to the bathroom eventually. So we can see that there's going to be an overlapping between the autonomic nervous system and the somatic nervous system. But really, when we look at the autonomic nervous system, we have to realize that this is going to be things that are going on sort of underneath the surface. So the autonomic nervous system neurons' effects can be both excitatory and inhibiting, whereas the somatic nervous system's effects are always excitatory, because you say move your hand and your hand moves, or move your foot moves, or close your eyes and they close. So those are all excitatory because they have to have stimulated the neurons to actually cause a muscle to contract. And you know about all that, you know, the physiology behind all that. So the somatic nervous system is always going to be excitatory. But we need to regulate our organ systems with just one system. That's going to be the autonomic nervous system. So how can we do that? Well, we have to have both a stimulating and also an inhibiting kind of way to do that, because we have to sometimes stimulate an organ to do its job, and other times not stimulate it or cause it to be inhibited. A good example would be our heart. If we're just sitting around watching TV, we don't really need our heart to be excited. But the heart, basically, can go with on its own maybe 200 beats a minute. Well, what keeps it from doing that? Because there's an autorhythmic sort of mechanism. So what causes the heart then to be inhibited is the autonomic nervous system. Whereas when we're out exercising, what we want the autonomic nervous system to do is just the opposite. We want it to actually stimulate or to excite the heart so that we can get more blood around. So we have to have both. Usually we have both effects. So we have both an excitatory and also an inhibiting factor as far as the autonomic nervous system's control is concerned. Sometimes you need to stimulate an organ and sometimes you don't. Like, for instance, you would inhibit, you know, the gallbladder from squeezing itself if you don't have any fat around in your intestines. you have fat around, and now that gallbladder gets excited, and it's going to be then exciting the gland to be stimulated to push the bile into your small intestine for fat digestion. So sometimes you need to excite, and sometimes you need to inhibit. When we look at the different subdivisions of the nervous system, we already have talked about the central nervous system, so we know that that's the brain and the spinal cord. We also talked about the peripheral nervous system. We talked about its sensory division and also its motor division. And really, when we look at the peripheral nervous system, we see that we have a somatic component, and that's going to be really what we've been talking about up to now. But there's also a visceral component as well, and visceral means organ. So when we look at the sensory division of the peripheral nervous system, these are going to be nerves coming out of the spine, not within the spine, because that would be central nervous system. So the nerves that are coming out of the spine are going to be both visceral sensory and also visceral motor. So we're going to be having a sensory component and also a motor component. When we look at the visceral motor component, we see we have two divisions. We have a sympathetic and a parasympathetic. This is where we're getting into the excitatory and inhibiting. So we basically have a somatic division and a parasympathetic division of the motor aspects to our organ systems. So the motor nervous system controls glands, cardiac muscle, and smooth muscle. Now, you remember that we have those three kinds of muscle. We have skeletal muscle. That's going to be our somatic nervous system, basically. But our smooth muscle and cardiac muscle are going to be under the autonomic nervous system. So this autonomic nervous system regulates unconscious processes that maintain homeostasis, such as blood pressure. We can't say, make your blood pressure go up or down. We don't have the say in that. It's going to happen or not. Also, our body temperature. If we get too hot, we can't say, oh yeah, it's a good time to sweat right now. Your body will do that automatically. Or how about our respiratory airflow? We're out exercising. We don't say, well, let's increase, you know, the CO2, let's increase the oxygen, you know, because we have too much CO2. Your body does that automatically. So the autonomic nervous system carries out its action without our intent. It carries it out automatically. The divisions, once again, are going to be that motor division, visceral motor. It's going to be the sympathetic and parasympathetic. Now, the sympathetic division prepares the body for physical activity. It's going to be the fight or flight. So we have the fight or flight, which is going to increase the heart rate. It's going to cause an increase in blood pressure, increase airflow, increase in blood glucose levels, etc. All things are going to be excited for increased physical activity. The tiger is coming at you. You decide you want to eat the tiger, so you're going to fight him. Or you decide that you're going to not want to be eaten by the tiger, and then you fly away or you flee. So it's either fight or you're going to have a flight. Now the parasympathetic division has a calming effect, basically. Usually it's going to be calming. So it assists in maintaining a sort of bodily balance. So we call this the feed and the breed nervous system, because it allows for digestion, it allows for waste elimination, it allows for sex, it allows for basic relaxation of the body. So think of when you're at home watching the tube, you're basically using your parasympathetic nervous system. But then someone comes knocking on the door and they say it's the police, now you're going to be using your sympathetic nervous system. Generally, the sympathetic stimulates and the parasympathetic will inhibit. Most organs have both, as we mentioned, such as the heart. And there's an autonomic tone that occurs. And this is going to be a balance between the two systems. So autonomic tone just means that there's going to be a homeostasis in these two systems. We all know people that are more sympathetic. They tend to talk faster. They tend to do things faster. They tend to think faster. And they tend to be hyper, we would say. But we also notice the people that are really mellow and they sort of like hang out. These are going to be more parasympathetic individuals. So we can see that sort of in personality. But really, that's in their nervous system as well. You'll tend to see those people that are excited or hyperactive, or we'll just say that they're hyper. You know, these people will usually be thin, and the other parasympathetics will probably be a little bit rounder. Now, the sympathetic division is going to mobilize body systems during an activity, Whereas the parasympathetic is going to conserve energy. It's going to promote housekeeping functions during rest. These are all coming from the visceral motor aspect of the autonomic nervous system, which conducts impulses from the CNS to cardiac muscle, smooth muscle, and also to glands. When we look at the parasympathetic nervous system, we see that it arises from the brain and the sacral spine. So really, it's going to be para. Remember, para means around. So it's going to be around the spine. It's going to be above in the brain and sort of in the bottom in the sacrum. So we call it cranial sacral. So it has long preganglionic fibers and short postganglionic fibers. And it has the ganglion in or near the organs. Now let's describe this. Remember that if we have an aardvark, and it's going to be talking to another aardvark, that first aardvark is going to be considered a preganglionic aardvark, whereas the next one is going to be considered a postganglionic aardvark. Given the fact that the head of the aardvark is going to be the ganglia, it's going to be a ganglia of a bunch of nerve cell bodies or heads of aardvarks. So a ganglia is going to be a collection or a gang of nerve cell bodies. So the nerves that are going to the ganglia are going to be considered the preganglionic, and the ones going away are going to be considered the postganglionic. Now in the parasympathetic, what we see is that we have a long preganglionic. In other words, that first aardvark has a very, very long nose. It's going to be going all the way from the brain all the way to, like let's say, the lung. And then once it reaches the lung, we're going to be then having a very, very short fiber that's going to go to the organ itself. So the first aardvark, long, second aardvark, real short, and the ganglia is going to be very close to the organ. Sometimes it's right on the organ. Like we have a nerve going from the brain all the way to the liver, and once it's on the liver, you actually have it be the postganglionic fiber that's very, very short, but the ganglia is actually there on the liver. So we have this a lot. We have that with the bladder. We have a long preganglionic fiber in the parasympathetic nervous system going to the bladder. Then there's a ganglia very close to the bladder with a short postganglionic fiber. So that's really going to be describing the parasympathetic nervous system. The sympathetic nervous system then is going to be just the opposite in many ways. It's going to be opposite in certainly its anatomy. So when we look at the sympathetic nervous system, we see that we have really the center part of our spine, the thoracic and the lumbar area, is going to be where the sympathetic nerves are going to be coming from. So that's, we call it sympathetic, whereas parasympathetic would be cranial sacral. Now our sympathetic is just going to be in the middle of our spine. Now the way this works is that we actually have on either side of our spine, we have ganglia, we have a chain. So we have these ganglia that are going to be on either side of our spine. Now remember when we talked about the parasympathetic, that they actually have their ganglia close to the organ. In this case, we have our ganglia right along the spine. So therefore, the sympathetic is going to have a short preganglionic fiber. It's going to go from the spine right to this ganglionic chain. Then from there, then it's going to go off into its respective organ. So when we looked at the parasympathetic, we had our nerves at either end of the spine. Now the sympathetic's in the middle. And now we turn around and say it's quite the opposite what we talked about before as far as pre- and postganglionic fibers. The first aardvark is going to have a short nose. It's going to go right to that chain that's right next to the spine. The second aardvark is going to have a very, very long nose. And it's going to take it all the way from that sympathetic chain all the way to the organ. So therefore, our first aardvark's got a short nose. The second aardvark's got a very, very long nose. And the sympathetic chain is going to be, as we said, very paraspinal, not next to the organ like it is in the parasympathetic nervous system. So you see how these two nervous systems are really going to be almost exactly opposite of each other. Now, let's discuss why this would be. Remember that the parasympathetic nervous system has the long preganglionic, short postganglionic. Remember, this guy can take its time Because he's concerned with relaxation, isn't he? It can take his time to get to the organ. Whereas the sympathetic is going to be the excitatory system. Sometimes you hear a dog in the background. It's going to be that little dog who's running around here on the beach. He's going after some seagulls. Now, the sympathetic nervous system is going to be, as we said, excitatory. So you need to get the message out fast. You need to get the message out fast to your sentinels. And your sentinels are going to be those ganglia. So those ganglia are going to be switching the impulse and where it needs to go. So you have to have the sentinels out there, and they're going to get the message to the organ. And it's going to go fast, because once it's there in the ganglia, it's going to be switched, and it's going to go right to the organ real fast with its long postganglionic fiber. So the anatomy sort of makes sense along with the, with the function of the nervous systems. So to review, we have the parasympathetic that's going to have the long preganglionic fiber. Sympathetic is going to be short. We're going to have the parasympathetic having the short postganglionic, whereas the sympathetic has a long postganglionic. And remember that the ganglia of the parasympathetic system is going to be very close to the organ, whereas the ganglia of the sympathetic is going to be paraspinal. Now, as we said, we usually have both divisions, parasympathetic and sympathetic, going to each of the organs. So they're going to have an antagonistic effect. So we're going to exert a dual innervation of the same effector cells. So we can look at the heart slowing down and also speeding up. We can also exert each system innervates a different kind of cell. So for instance, going to the eye, we can have the muscle actually causing a dilation or a constriction, because it's going to different muscles. It's going to be doing these different tasks. So we have different cells doing the different tasks, either opening the eye or closing it. What do you suppose would be a opening of the eye? Would that be parasympathetic or sympathetic? Yeah, sympathetic, because the tiger's coming. You're going to eat him or he's going to eat you. So you want to keep your eyeballs open. Certainly your irises should be open. Whereas when you're hanging out, night or whatever, the parasympathetic is going to close down those pupils. You also have a cooperative effect, seen when the two divisions act at different effectors to produce a unified effect, such as the parasympathetic will increase salivary serous cell secretions, and the sympathetic also will increase salivary mucus cell secretions. So they're both having a unifying effect. Both divisions do not normally innervate an organ equally, though. Usually they have either more of a stimulatory effect or more of a relaxing effect, but they're still going to maintain that tone that we talked about, that sympathetic tone. So the balance between the two systems is that we're going to have homeostasis, which is the dynamic balance between the autonomic branches. We're going to have sort of a yin and a yang going on. We sort of have the rest and digest system, the parasympathetic, but also we also have the fight or flight or the sympathetic systems. Sort of see that as an up or down teeter-totter kind of thing. And as we said, the sympathetic versus parasympathetic, we can see what's going to happen to our irises, either open or close. And the central control of the autonomic function is going to be on several levels of the central nervous system. Now, even though we're looking at peripheral nerves, we know that these are going to be controlled by the central nervous system. And the big one's going to be the limbic system, and we remember that the limbic system is related to our emotional system. So it's going to be connected to the hypothalamus. The hypothalamus, as you remember, was the seat of a lot of primitive functions. We also have the pathway going where the emotions are going to influence the autonomic nervous system because of the fact that we're dealing with the limbic system. So that's it for our talk about the autonomic nervous system. And we'll talk to you again next time on the Anatomy on the Beach. This is Dr. Leo Stoddard saying, see ya.